This is the United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello and welcome to the USDF's official podcast. I'm Chris Stafford, and on this week's episode, we're going to learn about the Dressage Seat Equitation Awards. We also begin a new four-part series that was recorded at the 2016 Adequan USDF Annual Convention entitled Masterson Method of Performance Equine Bodywork. And Coralie Hughes will begin this series talking about the skeleton of the horse. And then finally, we'll be hearing about the life and career of Major General Jonathan Burton in our American Dressage Legends series. But before all of that, we have some news coming up for you. But I do want to remind you, as usual, that the views of guests and hosts of this podcast do not necessarily reflect the views of the USDF or its members. And as we go to air this week, the 2017 FEI World Cup Final begins in Omaha, Nebraska, coming back to the US for the first time to this venue. And the USDF will be there, so if you are attending the event, be sure to stop by the booth. The first World Cup Dressage Finals actually took place in 1986, and there have been a total of 31 finals since then. And who could forget when, in 2003, Debbie McDonald with Brentina won the title, and a few years later, 2009 actually, Stephen Peters claimed the title with Ravel. The final itself has been held in the US a few times, in Los Angeles first of all in 1985, and then it went to the Thomas & Mack Center, of course, in Las Vegas in 2005, 2007, 2009, and 2015. The format, of course, is slightly different to either World Championships or Olympic Games. The Grand Prix competition will be held on the Thursday, followed by the freestyle on Saturday. And you can find much more information about the World Cup by going to the venue website. That's omahaworldcup2017.com. The USDF will be present with a booth at the event, so if you are attending the competition, be sure to stop by and also take the opportunity to share a photo on the USDF social media channels. And we will be reviewing the competition right here on the USDF's official podcast. And now, the USDF Senior Competition Coordinator, Kristen Brown, is here to tell us about the Dressage Seat Equitation Awards.
I'm happy to have this opportunity to share with our listeners some information about the USDF Dressage Seat Equitation Rider Awards that you may not be aware of. The Dressage Seat Equitation Rider Awards may be awarded at three different levels: elementary, accomplished, and elite. And it is important to remember that these awards are available to all riders, adult amateurs, junior young riders, and professionals alike. Yes, I said adult amateurs and professionals. Just like all of the USDF Rider Awards, the rider must have either a current participating or group membership with USDF when the scores are earned at USDF recognized competitions, and these scores will not expire. So if you don't complete all of the award requirements in 1 year, you will not have to start over. When you've earned all of the required scores, the next step is to submit the online USDF Rider Performance Awards application. Once the scores have been verified, not only will you be listed on the USDF website as having been awarded the Dressage Seat Equitation Rider Award, you will also receive a certificate and beautiful lapel pin in the mail, in addition to being recognized in the yearbook issue of USDF Connection. If you have any questions, complete award requirements are available in the USDF Member Guide on our website, or you can email rideawards@usdf.org, and I will be happy to answer any questions.
And now, Coralie Hughes is here to talk about the skeleton of the horse. And this was recorded at the 2016 Adequan USDF Annual Convention. Coralie is a certified practitioner of the Masterson Method of Performance Equine Bodywork.
Welcome to my PowerPoint-free zone. What we're going to talk about, I find absolutely fascinating, and it's been something that I've focused on with great intensity over the last 6 years since I left my corporate life. And it's all because, like you, I'm an avid dressage rider and love my horses, and then I got involved in the Masterson Method because I wanted to make sure that I was fair to my horses. I wanted to make sure I was asking something that they could actually do. if they understood it, and if I asked right, and if I did my job right. And so all of that sent me on this long journey that's been so much fun and so exciting for me. And I'm humbled to have an opportunity to share with you all, with all the experience that you have, some of the things that I've learned along the way. And so the idea of this is there's a lot that we can do to help our horses be at their best if we better understand what they have to do to use their bodies. And so because I had absolutely no anatomy, I was an arch humanist when I was going through college and studying languages and literatures and all of that, and then found out that I was absolutely fascinated by anatomy when it had something to do with a horse. You know, not so much a human, but the horses were fascinating to me because I wanted to understand what was going on underneath the skin. As a body worker, what was I actually doing? And then even more importantly, if a horse had a problem, how could I think logically about helping that horse? And so that took me on this journey of understanding better how the horse uses his body. So we'll talk first about anatomy made simple. You don't have to understand what you need to know to be a good dressage rider and a trainer and a compassionate horse owner. You don't need to know attachment points of the muscles on the bones, and you don't have to know a lot of Latin names, but there are some concepts that I'd like to share with you that have been really impactful for me, because if we better understand what's going on in the horse's body, how they have to use it for us for in dressage, then we'll have a better understanding of what causes them to limit their ability when last week they could do a half pass just fine and all of a sudden they can't. What in the world's going on? Barring a medical problem, usually it's excessive negative tension in the body somewhere, but it's unbalanced. And so understanding some concepts about how the horse uses his body, you can be armed with that knowledge to logically think through, if I can't do a half pass anymore, in this direction, where might the issue be? And then ways to take care of it. So we're going to go through anatomy made simple, the skeleton, and made very, very simple. Those of you that are anatomists are going to be dying and groaning about everything that I'm not saying, but we need to keep it at a level where it's just functional. I just care about just functional. Do I understand enough to not hurt my horse and be smart enough to think my way through problems? So the skeleton anatomy, the muscle anatomy, we'll be talking about the biomechanics of how a horse uses their legs, because that's the secret to understanding what's going on, and the biomechanics of bend and collection, and then some of the movements that are so unique to dressage. And then when you have that information, then it's very easy to then start thinking about why do we care about excessive negative tension? That'll be the next topic. It's because it's not benign. It's serious for the horse's health. And secondly, because the horse is easier to ride and to train if they aren't suffering from excessive negative tension somewhere in their body. And then we'll talk about, well, how do you know if your horse probably has, barring a medical issue, a veterinary issue, that you are dealing with excessive negative tension in the musculoskeletal system of the horse? How do you know? So I can give you some principles that you can think about there. And then the causes of excessive negative tension. I have a long list that we'll talk about, and a lot of them are what we do on their backs. And so we have some experiments that we'll try that I got out of. This was a book that I translated from the German. It's Ulrike Thiel's book, Ridden Dressage from the Horse's Point of View. And we're going to use some of her examples, because it's amazing what you can feel and the sensitivity you can understand when you use some of the experiments. And then there's always the question of what can you do to help your horse if there's excessive negative tension getting in the way. Okay, so let's start with the skeleton. I don't think people really understand what they're asking the horse's body to do. I certainly did not. And so we got Betsy Steiner to ride a horse for us, a Grand Prix horse, Bacchus. And we had the horse professionally painted by, you all know her, Susan, she's American. And so this book, The Dressage Horse Optimized, came from that project, as well as a 2-DVD set, The Dressage Movements Revealed. So a quick trick through the skeleton anatomy of the horse. The horse is basically a suspension bridge that wasn't built to be ridden by people. Starting at the pole, at the skull, and going all along the top of the spine, all the way back to the sacrum, is the nuchal ligament. And that ligament is goes all from one end of the horse to the other. And when the horse, the natural horse, spends 23 hours of his life grazing, and we bring them into domesticity and do everything to turn them upside down, putting them in stalls and feeding them from mangers and riding them. This is a critical ligament that stands all of these vertebrae up when the horse is down. So it completely changes and puts the back in a very healthy position when the head is down. And so it's nature creating a structure that could healthfully graze all day long, every day, and wander around the way horses do. So you have the skull, and the skull attaches to the cervical vertebrae, and there are seven cervical vertebrae. They're deep in the neck. They're not up at the top where a lot of people think they are. And the cervical vertebrae, the way they work, the neck is incredibly flexible, and it kind of reminds me of this wooden snake, where they can go in either direction. And that's why a shoulder in without too much neck bend is so difficult to get, because the head, which it weighs like 40 pounds, is suspended from an incredibly flexible pole. And what that means is that the muscles of the neck are constantly having to work to hold that head up. They only get relief when the head is down. Okay, so we have the seven cervical vertebrae that hook together for maximum flexibility, and we know how incredibly flexible that horse's neck is. And then where it comes in, there's this deep U here where the cervical vertebrae comes in and attaches to the first thoracic vertebrae. And if you have a chiropractor come working on your horse, they're always going to be looking at this juncture. It's a juncture that freezes up on the horse very easily, and when it does, the horse can't bring his shoulder through. And it's also very important because for that to be free, because a lot of very important nerves come through this area, and the brachial plexus is right there, and you can get impingement because this looks like a great big ball of muscle, but it's not. It's hollow. It's hollow because of the rib cage. And so the rib cage, of course, it's filled with all the vital organs, just like for us. And the rib cage, as we'll be talking about in a little bit, the muscles can bring the ribs closer together, or the muscles can relax and allow the rib cage to extend out. So the neck hooks onto the first thoracic vertebrae. The thoracic vertebrae then travel deep in the horse's body, not along the top. So on the top, what we're feeling as the back or the withers are actually long vertical processes coming off of the thoracic vertebrae. And the withers can be 10 to 12 inches long, these long levers going down into the body. So they're really important structures. When he puts his head down, the nuchal ligament pulls them up and they're more vertical, and which rests the back and rests the whole spine. Okay, so the scapula, or shoulder blade, we have a clavicle attaching our scapula to our body. The horse does not have a clavicle. So the scapula, the entire front leg, is actually hanging from soft tissue with no bony attachment at all. And so to move, the top part of the scapula has to rotate back when the leg rotates forward. And then for the leg to come back, the top of the scapula actually rotates forward when the leg comes back. So mobility in this scapula is really important, and we'll be talking about that a lot when we start talking about the muscles. Okay, so then you come with down along the spine. And when you're talking about the spine, there's next to no movement possible. But if the spine is fully able, because you don't have impingement or you don't have stuck spots due to usually muscular spasm, you end up with a tremendous amount of ability for bend. And in dressage, we have to have every little tiny space between all of these vertebrae available to us. And so we have to have all the mobility possible between every vertebral junction in order to have a good half pass, a good shoulder in, a good haunches in. It's got to all be there. And so you can't have spasms limiting the mobility you have in the back, or you end up with this will bend here, this won't bend here, but this will bend there. And then you can't have even bend through the spine, which is what we have to have. Here we have the lumbar after the 18th rib. And the lumbar are really interesting because the lumbar have wide lateral processes that go out to the sides of the vertebral body. If a saddle or something sits on those, it's painful and it's a bucking reflex. So it's really important for saddles to not get back on the lumbar. There's nothing supporting the lumbar from a skeleton point of view, but all of the power from the hindquarters goes through that area. So it's an incredibly important area to stay loose and supple in the horse, as well as strong, because of the way the structure is built there. Okay, so the lumbar connects to the sacrum at the lumbosacral joint, or the sacrolumbar joint, depending on how you like to say it. And this joint is critically important for us in dressage, well, anything a horse does. It's a monster hinge joint. If that hinge joint is too restricted and it can't do its job, then the horse can't step under, and the horse can't push back, the horse can't gallop, the horse can't collect, the horse can't canter. It's incredibly important ability of the horse here. Sacrolumbar joint is more than a hinge joint because there's a little bit of rotational ability. And so that little bit of rotational ability allows the hip to drop and come forward, so the hind leg can come forward. The horse's back, with tiny little junctures, the way the muscles are arrayed on it, the horse's back can flex up and down, and it can flex laterally, but there's a slight little bit of rotational ability. Without that rotational ability, we can't get any of the dressage movements out of a horse. And it's always muscles that control all of it. Okay, so where the pelvis sits on the axial skeleton at the sacrum, where those two meet is the sacroiliac joint. And the sacroiliac joint, it's a ligament. It's not a joint. It's a very powerful ligament. But the entire hind leg and the pelvis, once again, just like in the front where there's no joint holding the front leg onto the body, there's no joint, no bony joint holding the entire pelvis and the hind leg onto the axial skeleton. So you have all of the power of the hind leg pushing against the ground, propelling the horse forward, hitting that SI, and that's why there's so many SI issues in horses that often go overlooked. And the hip joint in the horse is a very complex, true ball and socket joint, like our shoulder. If that joint didn't exist, if it were a hinge joint, like all the other leg joints, the horse wouldn't be very useful because he would only be able to go straight. Everything we can do in any discipline is because of that hip joint. And it's quite a complex joint, but the ability of it to be rotational is critical for everything we want to do. But the stifle and the hock, they're all hinge joints that move straight in line. Interestingly, the stifle and the hock are hooked together with a pulley-like apparatus called the reciprocal apparatus. The importance of that is that whatever the stifle does, the hock has to do. Whatever the hock has to do, the stifle has to do. You have different sets of muscles controlling those two joints. If you have the joints operating the hock that are too tight, for example, then you're restricting the stifle at the same time. Does that make sense? Because of the pulley system working together. That's a quick trip through the skeleton of the horse.
Our thanks again to Coralie, and you'll be able to hear the other three parts to this series in the upcoming episodes of this podcast. And now we remember the life and career of Major General Jonathan R. Burton in our series of American Dressage Legends. Major General Jonathan Burton was inducted into the Rumor Foundation USDF Hall of Fame in 2007 in recognition of his leadership to promote and advance the sport of dressage in the US. Major General Jonathan Burton was one of the founders of the North American Young Riders Championships and served as the first chairman of the USDF Advanced Young Rider Council for 10 years. Major General Burton had a profound influence on dressage judging in the US over many decades as an FEI I judge, as well as a technical delegate and an FEI chief steward. This diversified horseman was truly one of the founding fathers of US dressage. Jack is perhaps best known for his seminal contributions to the Young Riders program. He was a member of the founding group of the North American Young Riders Championships in the early 1980s. the foresight of this small group that also included Hall of Fame members Jack Fritz, Andrew Tsisney, and Donald Thackeray in promoting and prodding to establish the NAYRC was unparalleled in its effect on the future of US dressage. The roster of competitors from NAYRCs include many former young riders who are competing or coaching successfully at the high performance level, such as Scott Hassler, Chris Hickey, Courtney King, and Kathleen Rain. General Burton was the first chairman of the USDF Advanced Young Rider Council. He served in this position from 1988 to 1998 and was made chairman emeritus. He helped to develop the first dressage selection criteria for the NAYRC and ran the council meetings at the annual convention efficiently and in a businesslike manner. Jack has had a profound influence on dressage judging in the US over many decades as an FEI judge, as well as serving as a technical delegate and an FEI chief steward. Jack Fritz said that General Burton was known for being the chief of international judges for many years. In the early 1980s, up-and-coming judges looked to him for guidance and mentorship. Some of today's judges who credit him as a guiding light for dressage judging include Lois Eukins, Sarah Geike, Cindy Sidner, and Christy Wysocki. His reputation as an international judge earned him the position as moderator of the AHSA Judges Forum with Wolfgang Nigley. Jack Burton also served as the FEI chief steward at the NAYRC at Temple Farms for many years. In a lot of ways, he was a behind-the-scenes promoter of dressage in the US. He was always encouraging competitors and competitions alike, frequently officiating in some form. Calm and reason were just some of his strengths. General Burton's interest in judging and riding led him to publish his book, How to Ride a Winning Dressage Test, in 1985, and The Judge's Guide to Step-by-Step Improvement in 1990. These books became very popular among competitors and judges. Jack's dressage career includes many other outstanding accomplishments. He chaired the USDF's founding meeting in 1973. He served as the USET's executive vice president from 1976 to 1985. As manager of the US Olympic team in 1976, and as chef d'équipe of the US dressage team at the 1988 Seoul Olympics. He has been the chairman of the board of the Dressage Foundation since its inception in the early 1990s. In addition to all of this, he was licensed to judge dressage, dressage sport horse breeding, eventing, driving, hunters, and jumpers. With all of these achievements, I have not even mentioned what he has done for eventing in the US, for which he is legendary, or that he competed in the Olympic Games in both show jumping and eventing. Jack has been a shining star in the sport of dressage in the US for a very long time. And finally, before we go this week, a couple of reminders here to make sure that you check out the education calendar on the USDF website for a list of the many educational opportunities that you'll find throughout the country. And if your GMO is planning to host a USDF National Education Initiative event this fall, the grant applications are due on May 1st for programs being held September 1st or later. And you'll find more information on the program by visiting the USDF National Education Initiative page on the USDF website at usdf.org. And that's it for this week's episode. Don't forget you can download the USDF podcast by going to iTunes and downloading that to any podcast app, including Podbean or Stitcher. And if you want to keep up with when the next episode will be available, be sure to check our social media on Twitter and Facebook. Until the next time, thank you for listening wherever you are in the world. And remember, the USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.